Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Mom, Becky measured her words carefully, we won't be able to make the family reunion next week, after all. Well, why ever not? Her mother knew Becky didn't like big parties. But these were, after all, her relatives, and everyone would be so excited to see her and Sam, since they were expecting their first child in just a couple of months. We just came from the doctor's, Becky felt her throat tighten, and he said that the baby may come a lot sooner than the due date. Oh, my dear, her mother reached out instinctively to hold her daughter's hands. What will you do? Becky felt her eyes go moist and took a deep breath. The doctor said first, I need some bed rest, and then he might prescribe some treatments that might be able to slow things down. Oh, my, her mother looked stricken. Well, maybe you should go upstairs right now. I'll fix some lunch and take it in to you. Would you like a cup of coffee? Decaffeinated, of course. Becky smiled. He didn't prescribe a cook and room service, but that sounds pretty good right now. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about premature babies? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today we are pleased to welcome back Dr. Siva Subramanian, Chief of Neonatology at Georgetown University Hospital and Professor of Pediatrics and Obstetrics Gynecology. His research interests include infant mortality reduction, trace element metabolism in infants, neonatology immunology, and bioethics. He has been married for over 34 years and has three grown children. Thank you for coming back to visit us, Dr. Subramanian.
Good to be here.
Dr. Subramanian, when is a baby considered premature?
Any baby that is born before the 37 weeks of pregnancy will be considered as premature. Of course, there are different classifications in terms of as they grow younger and younger, but all of them would be premature. The Institute of Medicine came out with a publication about a couple of years ago. They asked experts to look at in the last 25 years what appeared to be an increase in the rate of prematurity, and they found out that there was an epidemic of prematurity.
Why
that
an epidemic? Because
there is such an explosion of increase in prematurity. 25% and plus. You know, this is unheard of.
And this is in all the world or in Western?
This is primarily, United States and Western world.
Okay.
Because in many of the developing countries, these babies would not survive. They were looking into the whole host of causes. Obviously, first and foremost is potentially in terms of the IVF or the fertility treatments, in vitro fertilization treatments. In those years of 80s and 90s, resulted in multiple pregnancies, prematurity. So now there's a lot more guidelines are available. The second is there seems to be some racial disparity. There is an increased rate of prematurity in African-American women. So if you talk about nationally, it's say 7 to 10%. In African-American women, it is somewhere between 12 to 18%. The third is about age. People choosing to have the babies later on in age or sometimes too early in age also causes increase in prematurity. The other thing is about... less than 19 years old, teenage pregnancies. Even though they are healthiest in one fashion, they don't take enough care. The older women, 34, 35 and above, trying to choose to have babies, increases the risk of prematurity. And then you have those who have changes in weight, one extreme or the other. Those who have tension. Who among us don't have tension? But if there is increased tension, and also, the stress, causes problems in terms of prematurity. So there's a whole host of things the Institute identified and also acknowledged there are reasons that we don't know yet.
You've indicated that a lot has changed in the knowledge about premature infants in recent years. What are some of the medical advances?
Interestingly, in the last 15 years, there has been some rapid advances that have taken place, which really helps the baby to have not alone survival, but good quality of survival. For example, we were also involved in the clinical trials for that particular substance, is called surfactant, which is simply a lipid or a fat and a protein combined that we all secrete in our lung. In fact, the full-term baby, even a little earlier, starts secreting it from 36 weeks and lines the air sacs, alveoli, and keep them open. That's why our lungs are, you know, doing the job. But in premature babies, this surfactant is not enough or missing. And it takes time. It was not programmed by nature to be developed by them. And so when these babies are born, now we are able to give this to these babies, premature babies, so that the lungs become normalized as much as possible so that they can breathe on their own without a mechanical ventilation. Sometimes if the mechanical ventilation is done, it's for a shorter time. So this surfactant is a major component.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about premature infants.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Siva Subramanian about premature babies. Is this something that you give by mouth, or it's a shot, or how do you get
good
this
question.
Into their lungs?
This is actually, we put a little tube into the breathing tube, the trachea, and then we actually give that in a liquid form into the lung, so it actually goes all the way in. And then it gets a few days, by which time the cells will start to produce their own. And then it just buys that extra time. So that is one. The second, which actually occurs before the baby is born as premature, so as soon as the baby is recognized is going to come, the obstetricians can slow the delivery for about 24 to 48 hours by giving some medication. So it gives us an opportunity to be able to give an antenatal, before the birth of the baby, steroids. Even though the steroids these days doesn't have a good name. But in this situation, this is very important to be able to give the steroids to the mother 24 to 48 hours before the baby is born, especially those who are born less than 32 to 34 weeks. And what it does is normally, as the baby grows inside, around 35 weeks, internally it is generated. The steroids are generated that matures the lung, that matures several organs, to preparing the baby to be born. So since the baby is missing, because the baby is going to be born before 34 weeks, this, if it is given, makes that pulmonary maturity of the lung enough to be able to for the baby to come out and not even need surfactant, or if it needs it, then not need any other additional problem to keeping the lungs nice and functioning. And the steroids also stabilizes a lot of other complications that happen in babies. So this is another area of advance that has happened. The technology allowed the equipment that we were using for adults to be miniaturized so that it is more appropriate for a little baby. There are some babies that are born at the time of birth, they get into trouble. It's called asphyxia. That is, they don't breathe. They don't get oxygen exchanged. And in the past, either they died or they survived with a lot of problems in terms of, you know, developmental delays, or some survived without much problem. But now, for many of them, we can do what is called brain cooling. This allows for the brain to be cooled for 72 hours right after they were born. That seems to protect the brain. We're still learning more about it. The long-term information is still coming in. But it seems to make a difference in at least some of those babies, not all, some of the babies who would have otherwise had significant delays in developmentally to protect them.
How do you cool the brain? I just picture this enormous ice pack.
That is interesting. You know, now we have a pad that we can just put the baby on and cool that pad sufficiently enough to be able to cool the whole baby. And we can do it in a controlled fashion by putting a probe to monitor the temperature. So we drop the temperature to where we want and control it, and then to make sure that we can preserve it.
The only thing is, I'm picturing the newborn premature shaking baby who's cold because he doesn't have enough body fat,
yeah,
and then he's getting cooled on his head. Is he getting warm on his torso? What's going on?
They actually lie there, but they seem to do, at least not again all of them, but many of them, we have something to protect them. So there are, I mean, we can keep talking about the advances over and over, so, but there are some of them, just to give little examples, yes.
What specific things should parents be alert for when they bring their premature baby home?
This is, I think, is very critical. Many units, like ours, will prepare them first. See, again, these are all the changes that we have learned from the parents, that what is necessary. In the past, you know, one fine day will come, we'll say, hey, your baby is ready to go. Wrap up and here you go. And but now we say, they need to be prepared weeks ahead of time. So one of the things I always teach, you know, my people in my unit, the discharge planning starts on day one of admission. That is in terms of preparing the parents before even they take the baby out. And there's a whole host of things that they have to do. So they need to be involved in the care of the baby, obviously, the feeding of the baby, doing all the changes with the expert help of the nurse who is at the bedside. So I always call and tell them, these are the expensive babysitters that are there for you. Make use of them, you know. So preparing them. We even ask them to come and stay overnight. You know, we have special rooms, as though it's a bedroom in their home, that they can stay. And with the baby, both the parents, and take care of them as though they are doing it at home, but knowing fully well there is support available. And so this allows them to get the fear out, you know, in terms of taking care of it. It's very scary to take a premature baby who's been here for days, months at home. So we try to help them. And we also teach them resuscitation. Learning about the resuscitation for the infants helps them because knowledge is power. Once the babies are taken home, first and foremost is you have to look for the temperature. If the babies are born in the December, January, February, March and go home, you know, in the time period, we need to make sure the home is warm. And we try to give them some guidelines within around 70 to 78 degree Fahrenheit temperature. And make sure the baby is dressed well, particularly these babies should have a cap.
Isn't that interesting? That's a new thing the past maybe 10, 15 years or so.
It's coming in because the head is the largest surface area for the baby as opposed to the adults, and they lose heat. And so you need to cover that with a cap. And the second thing, simple things that we, you know, tell them, for example, if they're going to take the babies to a visit, doctor's visit or something, they need to make sure in the winter they warm the car ahead of taking the baby in. So that the car seat, everything is warmed because the baby is going to be lying on the car seat. It should be warm as well. And so that the baby doesn't become hypothermic, cold. And in the summer, they should put in a little air conditioning to make sure it is sufficiently appropriate temperature, not too hot, because it can reach 110, 120 degrees. So some of those precautions have to be done because these babies are still susceptible. They're not fully ready. The second is, even though a kid cannot be raised in a closet, but in the first 2 weeks, some people say even 4 weeks, don't invite too many people in, especially if there are other kids other than at home from outside who may have cold, cough, fever. So don't invite people. Also, these premature babies have been in a unit where it's 24 hours lighting. When they go home, they have to get used to this day-night cycle. It takes time. They're uncomfortable, you know, so they need to get used to this rhythm. Plus, these babies have been hearing noise all the time. And so even in the nighttime, it is quiet, no light. They may not go to sleep. They may upset the parents. You know, so if that happens, keep a night light on. Keep a low-level music. We suggest classic. You know, it's not my personal bias. There is a research to suggest that classical music, Eastern or Western, helps the babies better to settle, even some probably grow. And so these are some of these things. Nutrition, of course, very important. We encourage breastfeeding, very important, But sometimes in premature babies, in a couple of times in between, pump the breast milk and add some additional calories to give to the babies also till they grow, the first few months at least. Some babies will have to go home on oxygen or a monitor. You know, so that, again, they are trained, you know, before they go, and so that's taken care of to make sure. Immunizations. This is a standard classical question of everybody. Should premature babies get vaccinated the same way? Absolutely. Except for one vaccine, everything else is done on the basis of the same 2 months and 4 months and 6 months. Even though they were born 3 months early, they will still get the same way. Some of the modifications, you know, the pediatricians will be able to follow and advise. The hepatitis vaccination is the only one. When the babies are born less than 2 kilo, we give it later. But everything else, the vaccination schedule pretty much remains the same. So there is a whole bunch of things that they have to pay attention to, which is after discharge. You know, that's critical.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on premature babies.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Siva Subramanian about premature babies. Let's talk a little bit about long-term effects, like developmental or learning problems. Are premature infants more likely to have these kinds of problems?
Yeah. I think this is a question that is very critical because, as I was mentioning, when the term premature is mentioned, immediately all these things come up to the fore. Most of the times, the babies that are like 34 weeks and above, if they have not had any other major problems in the nursery, they'll be fine. But as they become smaller and younger, when we are getting down below 28 weeks, or even now 26 weeks and below, the survival is lower. Of those who survive, they have some problems neurodevelopmentally, and the cerebral palsy is a possibility, even though that if you take a look at the total number of babies, children with cerebral palsy happens in full term, because there's a larger number of babies born full term. Because when you talk about premature, there are anywhere between 5 to 15% of the babies that are born premature, more commonly, more so in African American, there's a higher proportion of prematurity than Caucasian. And the Asian has the lowest, you know, in terms of the prematurity rate. Many reasons contribute to that. But as we see, that if there are about 4 million births a year in the United States, about 400,000 to 500,000 kids are born premature. And so if you take this, when you go down in terms of the gestational age, which is the time that they were in the womb, and they get smaller, there is more developmental delays problems. Again, not all premature babies, but when they are much smaller, they have to be a lot more attention. Physiotherapy needs to be done, you know, when the baby's in the hospital and outside the hospital. The delays could be simply in terms of motor delays, where they may have some gait problems, but they can still walk, and in terms of cognitively, in terms of their development, they may be fine. They may have some hearing problems. Occasionally, there may be problems related to sight. All of these things, many of these things can be looked at before discharge, and some of those things have to be followed later on. Some babies may have, in addition to motor problems, problems related to the intelligence. And so there may be some of them may need special education and can be still mainstreamed, and some of them may have to remain in with special education. And so there is a variety of problems that potentially can happen that we pay attention to. Increasingly, for a change, you know, the counties and, you know, various state governments provide some support early on in life. This was always my complaint. We do give great care in the NICU, and then the babies go home, not get enough support at all. But it is getting better.
NICU is neonatal.
Neonatal intensive care units.
Right.
Thank you. This is our jargon.
How young are some of these diagnoses made? When children are very, you know, when they're newborns, when they're 2 or 3 years old, how soon do you begin to notice some of these problems?
Some of these things, the developmental delays that you can pick up during the first year, 18 months.
A pediatrician would be able to do
absolutely.
That.
And then we also have a developmental pediatrician who we always refer these babies to in addition to the pediatrician.
What is the difference?
Because this is a pediatrician who has further specialized in assessing the developmental patterns and recommending interventions. Even though some of the pediatricians can do that themselves, these are an additional category of people, especially if there are problems, they can do more, you know, for those kids. In terms of developmental pediatricians or somebody who we need to seek some help after the baby is discharged. And some of the problems may come up only when they go to school. So some of this can be picked up early, some of them a little later, and some of them may be so minute we may never know.
Now, do you get to find out what happens to some of the children you've seen born very early?
Let me give you a story on this. I took care of a baby about 30 years ago, you know, and this was at that time slightly less than a kilo. That means about 2 pounds, just over 2 pounds an ounce or something. And in those days, that is extremely difficult to keep them alive. And so we struggled with the kid for about 4 months. And then finally, we were able to discharge the baby. And about 16, 17 years later, I got a call. This is from England. And the mother identified herself and immediately recognized, because it's a unique name. And so I asked about the baby. And she almost fainted on the other side. You remember? And she said, I'm bringing him for a visit, to Georgetown University Hospital for our place. And would you be there next summer? I said, sure. So the kid was about 18 years old by the time the baby came. With the baby, now a child and now an adult. So this young adult strapping man was being brought in. 6 feet, 2 inches, blue-eyed, blonde guy. And, I show him around. And then he's going to join, undergraduate in Cambridge, honors in maths, he's going to go. That is some of the good experiences of a baby, like 1,000 grams, a 2 pounds baby who can do. And so these are something that we get an opportunity to see because we have a follow-up clinic in our place. And the three of our neonatologists, along with the developmental pediatrician and psychologist and occupational and physiotherapist, follow these children. And so we get some feedback in terms of how they do it. This is very important because many times neonatologists don't get to see the other side. They may not know what is happening.
Dr. Subramanian, what resources would you recommend for parents who'd like to research the subject further?
There are some nice websites. Not all websites necessarily give right information. March of Dimes has a website, and they have a focus on prematurity now. And they give a lot of good information, including before pregnancy, what are the things you have to do, including like taking folic acid and vitamins, not drink alcohol and drugs. So they give a very nice advice before pregnancy, planning on it, while you are having a potential premature baby, and after you are taking the baby home, they give you some very nice websites and address. So much of times anywhere that can be looked at. The National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, NICHD, also has some great resources for the various problems related to prematurity. American Academy of Pediatrics has got several valuable information, including on the vaccination immunization of these babies. The term itself is bonding by Kennel, John Kennel. K-E-N-N-E-L, and Marshall Klaus, K-L-A-U-S, and Phyllis Klaus. There is a book that recently was published, Baby at Risk, by Ruth Geyer, G-U-Y-E-R. And Nemours Foundation, N-E-M-O-U-R-S, Nemours Foundation, has got some great resources. Parenting Your Premature Baby and Child, by Davis and Stein, S-T-E-I-N. It's another good book to have. There is also the Premature Baby book by Dr. Sears. So there's a whole bunch of things that are available for those who want to read a little bit more before, during, or after a premature delivery.
Which is much better than tearing your hair out.
Yes.
Well, our thanks to you, Dr. Siva Subramanian, for giving us such amazing amounts of information and also support for parents who are facing this very difficult time.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 400. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.